All right, guys, thanks for coming down. We have a speaker here for you today. I'm just going to introduce him. His name is Fox Beyer. He wrote a book. It's called Letter Kindling, Igniting, Inspiring, and Invoking the Fire Within. So Fox, I've known for a long time. I played baseball with his brothers. Fox is a teacher at Whitney Park High School, and he's also a baseball coach for the Somerset Patriots, which is a professional baseball team in Bridgewater. So Fox has a unique perspective on life, which he's going to share with you, and hopefully you guys can take something away from this. I know I've known Fox for a long time, and I know he's going to be very passionate about what he's going to speak about, so please give him your attention. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm going to play this video. The volume is not great, but who cares?
I think it was a little inspiration. It doesn't have to look very far.
Yeah, he's definitely not number one. He's the most positive, strongest individual I've ever met.
My name is Fox Beyer. I've been born in two ice cream machines. In the beginning, it didn't look good in terms of my survival. I was given, from what I'm told, a 25% chance to live. And then as my condition improved,
in the week after I was born, my father decided to name me Fox because he felt like I had outsmarted all of the doctors. I had great, great support growing up. I grew up about half an hour from here in Chatham, New Jersey, a nice little town in Morris County. I have three siblings. I have an older brother, a younger brother, and a younger sister. And some of my first memories with all of them was playing baseball in the backyard. One day, the director of this program at the MSG Network, Mike Quick, called me and said, Fox, knowing that I was a big Yankee fan, that I was going to throw out the first pitch to a Yankees game. The first person I actually meet is Derek Jeter. I shake his hand, and one of the first things he says is, don't bounce this pitch. Wade Boggs was great. At the time, he had a sister with MS, so we sort of connected that way.
Let's give a big hand to a most courageous athlete, Fox Beyer.
It was not a strike, and I also remember TV Network, who was doing a piece on me, had a cameraman behind home plate. I threw out the first pitch, and I twirled around, I tipped my cap, and this man laughed so hard that he fell backwards with the camera, so there's no footage from behind home plate of me actually throwing out the first pitch because of that. Met Brett in college. We'd have a lot of chats on the bus on the way to class, and that's how we first got acquainted with each other. I majored in history and in Spanish, and I went back for an extra year to get my degree in Spanish. And during that year, when I was a coach on the baseball team at the University of South Carolina, we went to the College World Series. One day, I knew Brett was here as the pitching coach, so I called him one day, and he said, sure, come on out. Came out a bunch of times in 07, and 08, I got a uniform, and fortunately, I've stuck ever since. The luckiest guy on earth.
No, that's right.
This organization cares about the players more than anywhere that I've seen. We're very much a family. I truly believe there is no other place like this on earth.
I've been a Spanish teacher at Whippany Park High School for the past 12 years. All I try to do there is give them the same great experience that I had growing up. I coached baseball and volleyball at Whippany Park for 7 or 8 years, and again, I'm teaching them about life.
I submitted a manuscript to a publishing company, and luckily, within a couple of days, they offered me a deal. I memorized a lot of the poems, and I go around
coffee shops, ice cream parlors, libraries, anywhere that will take me, and I recite these poems.
My ultimate goal is to affect as many people as I can in a positive way. I do want to pursue public speaking more, possibly as a career, and I want to do it in a way where I'm really completely honest and giving my heart to the audience, but doing it in a way that's meaningful and understandable.
Our administrator, Fox Beyer!
Let's give a big hand to a most courageous athlete, Fox Beyer.
My name is Foxfire. And this...
Thank you very much. The video worked out. So,
now, you know,
my name is Fox. There have been some very interesting interpretations of my name over time. So, just like the animal, F-O-X, okay? One day, I ordered some pizza. And she asked, what name should it be under? And I said, Fox, F-O-X. She delivered a pizza box. The name was S-O-C-K-S. Who would name their kid Socks? That was a joke. One more joke. Another joke is, it's actually real, but it's kind of a jokey. So in the year 2000, I was a coach for a collegiate baseball team in Edenton, North Carolina, called the Edenton Steamers. And my house mother, Ruth, was older at the time, but still with it. I would go to a beach before games and read. And I was living with a friend of mine named Stuart. So one day I went to the beach and Stuart came home and I wasn't there. And he asks my house mother, Ruth, where is he? She said, Frog is at the beach. She called me Frog. So my name is Fox. So what I'm going to do now is tell you a story. I'm going to narrate what it's like for me to go through a typical day. I hope this empowers you. But I'm going to get real, okay? I might cry. I might yell. I might laugh. We're going to go through all of the emotions. Go there with me in the hope that it empowers you. Sound good?
Yep.
Okay, this is a typical day. I'm a school teacher, so I'm going to go through a typical day and what goes through my mind. It's 6 a.m. The alarm clock on my iPad mini goes off. Well, I am grateful for this gift to my Somerset Patriot family. I know the alarm clock, it's not its primary intended use, so naturally, I want to punch it. But I don't. Instead, I hit snooze twice in the next 10 minutes. And then I hear Coach Tanner's voice in my head. Off your butt and on your feet, gotta get up so we can eat. So I oblige, and I begin to put my right leg onto the floor. As I do this, I look at my hip, my right hip, and I see a scar that goes all the way up to the top of my hip. It's a product of a 1984 and 1988 hip osteotomy surgery, in which my surgeon inserted metal rods in both my hips, breaking both my legs in the effort that I'd walk less knock-kneed. Well, I put my left leg on the ground, and the first thing that happens is that my knees kiss together for the first of many times that day. I look down at my knees and I say, boy, you boys have really gotten to know each other well over the past bunch of years. CP is relentless. Captive of my body, this thing has got me. Sitting here in this chair, so begins the unfair. Thought so by some, blind, deaf, and dumb. Did he hear that sound? How is he getting around? Listen, my crossed eyes gave me x-ray vision in disguise. From my first ectomy to my last otomy, my scars are my gift. I begin to walk to the bathroom, and I pick my feet up just high enough so I don't trip and fall flat on my face. Each step carries with it a memory. This time, it's 1990. I'm lying in a hospital bed, and I hear the sound that a morphine machine makes, injecting morphine into my sliced body. I walk into the bathroom to shower. As I get in the shower, I hold on to things more than gently.
I'm gonna go out. I bathe. As I bathe, I see all my scars. Each one carries with it a memory. Heel cord extension, hamstring transfer, left testicle. Hip osteotomy, chest tube. I get out of the shower. Again, holding on to things more than gently because I want to keep my teeth. I towel off. I groom myself. And the last thing that I do is I put contact lenses in my eyes. And I am reminded when I do this that I cannot focus on one object with both eyes at the same time. Product of being cross-eyed at birth, playing baseball at grandma's house, and various eye surgeries. I step back and see myself in the mirror. It's 6:30 in the a.m. and the snooze has become my friend. Soon I see myself in the mirror. He looks back at me and says, "Fox, have you done all you can do? Are you ready for what is to come? Are you thankful for what you have been given?" I ask what Sage has done. Do you realize responsibility comes with pleasure and success? You must be a man of integrity to always be at your best. And no matter there are no cameras and that you are alone under this roof, you can hide sometimes from the outside world, but I always see the truth. I step out of the bathroom, and I walk into my bedroom to get dressed. Once again, picking up my feet just high enough so I don't trip and fall flat on my face. Each step carries with it a memory. This time it's 1988, post-hip osteotomy surgery. My legs are broken at the hip. They are bandaged, not casted yet. I'm told it's time for me to put weight on my feet. With my dad holding from behind, I take my first step post-surgery. And while it's very hard to describe the pain that came with each step that day, it is impossible to describe the euphoria of walking again. I sit down to get dressed. And as a general rule, this takes me 4 times as long as it does for the average bear. No big deal. The hardest part, however, is putting on and tying my shoes. I do this with my left foot with a few problems.
The right foot is much harder. I begin to do this, and I see my neighbor in the parking lot go to her car, bend down, and tie her shoe in 2 seconds flat. I can't do that. So I sigh, and I look to my left, and I can picture my mother telling me as a 6-year-old, "Fox, you have CP, you walk funny, that's it." Blunt, but she has a point. I can't help but think in this moment the millions of people who have it tougher than me for millions of reasons. Take Andre, for example. Andre was my roommate in rehab in 1990 after a surgery. At 21 years old, Andre was given a motorcycle for his birthday. Shortly thereafter, he took it for a ride without his helmet on. He went over a patch of wet leaves, and the first thing he hit was his head. So back then, Andre stood in front of me without any access to his long-term or short-term memory and was prone to violent mood swings. So for example, one day his mom would walk into our room and he'd be all lovey-dovey, kissing and hugging on her the entire time. The next day, she'd walk in and he'd ask me, "Fox, who is this B-I-T-C-H who's trying to enter the room?" Heartbreaking. There's Jerry. At 16 years old, Jerry went out on his bike to get groceries for his mother in the middle of the day when he was hit by a drunk cab driver. Jerry, like Andre, lost his long-term and short-term memory and was prone to violent mood swings and profane-laced tirades directed his mother's way. So yeah, I think I can tie my shoe. So I do this, and I stand up. I stare straight ahead, and I think about all the times during this day, this teacher, that the perception of me is going to get mixed up with the actual reality. I think back to the seventh grade. In the seventh grade, I was in PE class. We walked around the track, or ran around the track, were timed in doing so. A classmate in the locker room was going around asking people their times. He got to me. I began to tell him my time. He said, "Fox, you don't count." In that moment, I stood up and said, "Don't tell me what I can and cannot do.
To my image, I'm defiant. What you see is so far from true. I'm a mental giant. I'm frail, I'm built like, and I'm nicknamed Scarecrow. Inside, what a lot do not know. I have been broken and welded so many times. I can't tell you this, no matter how hard I try. Misjudged book and misread cover. I'll tell you what lies under. My toes, they're curled. My body wants to go feel. In my life, I have seen millions of needles. I pick up my legs to run, you know, like kids do for fun. But me, I've got to be careful because every step could lead to a tumble. This I can't forget. In front of my face, my eyes. Specs for ears, they can't disguise. My pupils are never in sync, no matter how hard I try and think. But don't tell me what I can and cannot do. To my image, I'm defiant. What you see is so far from true. I'm a mental giant. I grab my things and begin to walk out the door. Again, each step carries with it a memory. This time, it's 3 days post-hamstring transfer surgery. And my surgeon, Dr. Nuzzo, walks in my room, dressed in plaid from head to toe, and he's doing all these weird coordination exercises, like patting his head, rubbing his stomach. Can anybody do that? I can't do that. You're annoying me. Much respect. But he's doing all of that, okay? My body is sliced up beyond belief, okay? And he asks me, Fox, how are you doing? Good? I have never told him a bigger lie in my life. When I said, great, never been better. When I said that, my body went into a full spasm. It felt like my body had been lifted from my hospital bed all the way up to the ceiling. My nose hit the ceiling. I came back down less than gently. I walk out the door, and the first thing that I have to do is go down a flight of stairs to get to my car, which is in my garage. Cerebral palsy, what I have, CP, does not make this easy. But again, I can't help but think of the millions of people who have it harder than I do for millions of reasons. Reggie was another roommate that I had in rehab. At 14 years old, your age, he stole a car. He drove it into a telephone pole and was paralyzed from the waist down. There was Michael at 15 years old. He was my roommate. At 15, he walks into his parents' bedroom and says, Mom, Dad, I have a headache. Michael passed out. Michael had a brain aneurysm. So in those days, when I was in rehab in 1990, he lied in front of me, in a coma, in a diaper, unable to move, unable to talk. So yeah, I'll walk down the stairs. I hold on the rails to keep from flying. Man, you know I ain't lying. Sometimes I laugh to keep from crying. Every day I keep on fighting. Legs entangled, knees entangled, feet entangled, hips so entangled. I get into the car. Right leg first. This time I can't see my scars because, well, I'm wearing long pants, people. I begin to drive. Somewhere along the line of my drive to work, I make a left-hand turn. And when I do this, a baseball in my trunk falls out of a glove and bounces around when I can hear it. That glove was given to me by Brandon Clausen, an ex-major league pitcher, who gave it to me as a thank you for throwing batting practice to his Columbus Clipper teammates in 2007. I am so thankful that throwing a baseball has nothing to do with how quickly I get dressed. I think about all the places this white ball has taken me. Thousands of hours of playing baseball in the backyard with my siblings. Thousands of hours of throwing a baseball, a tennis ball, off a wall, in a tree, in a park, off a school somewhere. Over 100 innings pitched in high school. My left arm somehow got me to the University of South Carolina, where in 2000 and 2002, we were SEC champions. My left arm somehow got me to Yankee Stadium in 1997, where I threw out the first pitch to a game in July of that year. My left arm somehow got me to be the bench coach of the Somerset Patriots, where in 2008, 9, and 15, we were Atlantic League champions. How about an applause? That's a plug for Somerset. So good evening, Arena Sold Out with Doubters. I stand before you completely empowered. I am so excited to hear the volume of silence coming from this room. Don't tell me I know your stance. I can't and I won't and I have no chance. It's you and me running the mile, but all you see is my back and you're in denial. Running is over, it's time to wrestle. You're the alpha and I'm nothing special. The whistle sounds around the mat, you're pinned in a half minute, so take that. You have the bat and I have the ball, a double or nothing and once and for all. This battle, it wasn't close. You thought me a loser. And guess what? You misdiagnosed. I pull into the parking lot of work, and my mind drifts off for a minute. I picture myself sitting on the beach. I wake from a short slumber. I have to get up, and no, it's not because the stupid alarm clock on my iPad mini went off. I have to go pee. I look behind me. I see my parents' beach condo a quarter mile away. I look in front of me. I see the ocean, just feet within my grasp. I stand up, my knees kiss together, and I say, well, the whole world's a bathroom. I park. I get out of the car. I walk toward the school building. Each step carries with it a memory. This is where I want you to partake. So in between each line, I want you to say the word step. Are you ready? Are you ready?
Yes.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Here we go. You start.
Set.
It's got to be louder.
Set.
Your idol no more.
Set.
Pick yourself up off the floor.
Set.
Get up out of your seat.
Set.
You will not lie there in defeat.
Set.
In mind and body, a winning tranquility.
Set.
Without movement, there is no possibility.
Set.
Each pace equals a seed.
Set.
And the world's largest sequoia tree.
Set.
One by one, they'll amass.
Set.
Chlorophyll passes down victory path. Nice work. You deserve an applause. So those are all the thoughts that I have before I get into school. Does anybody here have similar thoughts? Awesome. I'm the only one. I'll bet you do. You're just afraid to raise your hand. Now, I begin to walk into the school building. And as I do this, I see myself in the door's reflection. I am amazed that no matter how old I get, I'm a man, 5'8" tall, and I have never been able to buy a pair of pants that fit me. I'm also amazed that when I open the door for a series of female colleagues and how many bags they're carrying. Do you girls carry a lot of bags when you go into school? Are you like bagalicious? Yeah? What's the most amount of bags you carry into school? Anybody more than three? Raise your hand. It's unbelievable, yeah. Female colleagues, it's ridiculous. But for me, walking without anything is a conscious act of will, and the word without rings in my head because I know the less I have, the more worry-free I am. I walk into school, and negative aspects of my high school experience ring in my head. I hear things like crippled creep and you don't look like a senior. I see so many kids trying to be cool. And I know in that moment that regardless of what content I am ordered to teach, my main job is to make you all understand that the moment you were conceived, you were genetically designed to be different. So why on earth would you try to act like somebody you're not? Are you trying to stand out, but sure, your twin is out there, no doubt? They wear what you wear and they do what you do, your carbon copy, nothing new. They have your tone, your heartbeat, your mission. Remember, it's impossible to measure what lies within. With so many similar things, recall how you're made, because people have no fear. Your individuality is saved. I look in the auditorium. And I know that the auditorium was the place where in the seventh grade, who was a year younger than you all, I was chasing around a girl that I had a crush on. and I fell. In that moment, I look at my hands. I think of my therapists, Kathy, Debbie, Ted, Jose. You see, they knew that as a kid growing up with CP, I was going to fall every day of my life. It was inevitable. So they knew it was imperative that I put my hands out in front of me to protect myself from any further harm. Because 99.9% of my falls, people, are forward. My hands, they've been there. In 1997, remember when I threw out the first pitch to a Yankees game? Before that footage, I fell on the top step of the dugout. In 2002, during the player introductions of the College World Series, I fell forward, and my hands were there. I look at my hands. I realize that my life, and yours, is not trying not to fall every day. It's about always trying to get back up. And that my life, and yours, is less about pain and more about beauty. I open the door to my room. I see two things in my eye's path. I see wires, entangled wires and crumbs. Do any of you see that in your classrooms? Wires and crumbs? Like entangled wires? You're shaking your head, right? You're right in front of me. You're all wearing the same thing, but I want to take the mic over here. I'm going to get there. I'm gonna get there if it kills me. Just tuck your feet in because you know I chuck and fall a lot. Oh, I'm sorry. That's all right. And I'm going to sit. So you were saying that you did see entangled wires and crumbs, correct? So say your name.
Sabina.
So Sabina, obviously you're in the eighth grade. Can you tell us whose class you see wires and crumbs?
This is Postel.
Say that one more time, really loud.
Mrs. Postel, there's a bunch of wires in the wall.
That's okay, because Mrs. Postel, is she here? So, I'm with you because my room is an absolute mess. Total fire hazard, because I have my iPad, I have my computer, my phone, another iPad, a cranberry, a raspberry in there, and I like to eat in my room. So, there you see it. Entangled wires and crumbs. Sabina? Thank you.
You're welcome.
Applause. Tuck your feet in. Thank you, people. So I see wires. Entangled wires and crumbs. And I think of my dad. You see, for 17 years, Dad worked in the fire protection business. And he told me a number of times, Fox, the number one reason for kitchen fires is what? And I chuckle. I look outside. I see a baseball field. And I think of a time where I could have used actual fire. It was 1995, way before you all were born. I was playing right field in a JV baseball game. It was so cold outside that if I didn't move, I wouldn't be able to move at all. But I had a fire to pitch. I wanted to do it every day. And that day in the fifth inning, Coach Irvin gave me my chance. He called me in the game. One small problem, people. It had nothing to do with my knees or my gait. My glove hand was almost frozen into a fist, so I was having a very hard time keeping my glove on it. Coach gave me the ball. I called over our third baseman, my friend Luke. I explained to him the situation. He spent about half a minute trying to put it on my hand. But I had to pitch. It was calling me. It might be hard to spot talent, but it's harder to spot confidence. Those who have the it, the that toughness in abundance. Tell me, who are the ones from when they wake up? It's not about their speed, their power, or their agility. It's their mental makeup that we marvel at with such humility. They're at their best when they feel their worst. Never do they moan, cry, or pout. Their it is their uncontrollable thirst. About their it, they have no doubt. Ante up. The chips are down. They got them one time. They are lucky. About their it, it has no sound. Next time around, he's the goods. He's the money. Tell me, is it in his food? No. The it is his attitude. Okay. First period is about to start. Question. When I say mental makeup, what do I mean? Raise your hand. What is mental makeup? I'm going to go over here. You had your hand raised. Keep your hands raised. Keep them raised. We're pointing at this young man. He had his hand raised. So say your name.
Anthony.
Can I call you Antonius? Is that all right? All right, Antonius. What is mental makeup to you?
It's when you're feeling one way but show a different.
Say it again.
It's when you feel one emotion and show another emotion.
Feeling one emotion but showing another. So you might be just churning inside, but you don't want anybody to see it, right? You kind of want to be in what I call an ice pick. That's one of the keys to life, people. How about a hand? For Anthony. One of the keys to life, being your best when you don't feel good at all. Okay, now the school day begins. Are you ready? Jump back in. The bell rings, and first period has begun. As my students walk in and I greet them, I think how much I want to trade your age for mine. With one small stipulation, I would not want to be as dumb as I was when I was your age. I'll take you back to the seventh grade. I walk out of Mrs. Brockett's history class. I go to my friend Aaron's locker. I turn the dial, 7, 17, 24. I go into his wallet. I take all the cash out of it just so I can have lunch from the school cafeteria. Retrospect, it always tells the truth. Can you please say retrospect between every line? You ready? Retrospect? Go.
Retrospect.
Now I see clearly my youth.
Retrospect.
I was young and I was dumb.
Retrospect.
Or just a kid having fun.
Retrospect.
Dear God, why did I wear that hat?
Retrospect.
And why did I get angry over that?
Retrospect.
Mom and Dad, this place, I'm sick of it.
Retrospect.
Mom and Dad, you're right, now I miss it.
Retrospect.
I was always looking for something more.
Retrospect.
Now, it was the time and the place that I most adore. Time goes by way too fast. I'm so glad to still have a past. Thank you much. Go ahead. For you. Let experience help you. Let it be one of the best teachers ever. That's the message in that poem. Class begins, and I am a grammarian at heart. It's all about verbs, adverbs, indirect object pronouns, direct object pronouns. But I know that syntax does not equal intelligence, and it doesn't work for everybody. In fact, in that moment, it's not working for anybody because everybody is on their phones. We have all been sucked in by this technology revolution. As you could see, including me. Let me ask you a question. What good does it do when you Snapchat in class to somebody in China, but you do it every single day, and because of that, you have no idea your friend's name in front of you, behind you, to your left, and to your right? That actually happened in one of my classes. Wi-Fi might seem to connect in time, but it so too began the great divide. Social media looks like a brilliant disguise, but people, Anybody with a soul can read between the lines. I step back in the aisle, I trip and fall over a piece of paper, this time on my back. I look at the paper. It's today's assignment. It was due 15 minutes ago, and it's blank. I want to scream. I can't. But I have to show my makeup. I have to show my character, Antonius. So what do? I get up. I get up slowly. And I get up for those that can't. The bell rings. It's the end of third period. I have to step out to use the men's restroom. On my way there, I'm passed by a colleague. He says, "Fox, how are you doing? Good?" I stop and think for a minute how 95% of this day has not gone how I planned it. But again, on my best day, I have never felt all right. So it made sense to me when I said, "Yeah, dude, I'm doing good." I walk into the men's bathroom, and I am so surprised how this place looks just like the bathroom at John A. Holmes High School, where in the year 2000, as I told you, I was a coach for the Edenton Steamers, a collegiate wood bat league in North Carolina. My best friend, Stuart, was the coach there. And that year, I led the league in one category. Do you know what it was? I'm going to go all the way in the back and see if they can guess what category I led the league in. I'm going to go to Coach Lopez first. Coach, for $64,000, can you tell me what category getting thrown out of the game? No, but I would have loved to. I did get tossed that year. I did get tossed. Then I went to the beach and read. Any other guesses? So what category did I lead the league in that year? What part about pitching?
Strikes.
Threw the most strikes. I'm going to say, I didn't realize that, but yes, in batting practice, I threw the most strikes. So thank you for reminding me. I'll add an applause. Any other guesses? What did I lead the league in that I knew about? Any other guesses? People, that year, I led the league in getting into full uniform before anybody did. I can recall a game that we had one day in Durham, North Carolina. Durham is 7 hours from Edenton. So we left the parking lot in Edenton for a 7 o'clock game at 11 o'clock in the morning. And you can bet by 10:30, I was in full uniform. I walked on the bus. I passed our manager, my friend Stuart. He says, "There goes Fuff. Fuff. F. UF stood for Full Uniform Fox." I look in the mirror and I am amazed at the disconnect between my body and my mind. You see, my body over time wants to go fetal. It curls up like this. I've told you before, my toes are curled, my body wants to go fetal, right? But me, Fox Byer, all I want to do is stand up straight. A fire burns as my world turns from clear to overcast. Rain comes and I go blank. A day, a chance. Will I adapt, advance? This present tense makes no sense. Out there, there has to be an answer. The bell rings again. It's the end of fourth period and it's time for lunch. While I would love to stay in my room and have lunch in it, alone, it's far too hot in there. So I decide to take a quarter mile trek to a cafeteria faculty lunchroom, which nobody sits in, just the way I like it. So I grab my lunch, and when I tell you I pick my feet up just high enough up off the ground so I don't trip and fall flat on my face, I mean, I pick myself, my feet up, just high enough up off the ground so I don't fall flat on my face. On the edge of catastrophe, a one-time, everyday calamity. God bless my friends and my family, but this gate just does not want to work. If this is your gate, how do you spell that? Any guesses? It's your walking gate. It's not a gate in a yard. How do we spell it? For your very own Foxfire baseball card, who would like to spell that word? It's worth a lot of money. Oh, we're going to go in the back. I'm gonna dangle the carrot in front of this young man. If you just give me a moment. Doggone it.
Card?
Okay. He has his hand raised. How do you spell the word gate, meaning your walking gate? PSATs. This is your PSAT. Yes, sir. Please say your name.
Eli.
Eli, how do you spell gate? You have one chance. Say the word and then spell it like a spelling bee.
G.
So, gate.
Gate. G-A-I-T.
Is that right? That is correct. You get a free baseball card. Way to go, Eli. So then, I get to the cafeteria, somehow without any problems. I look at the food in the cafeteria lunch line. Macaroni and cheese, chocolate chip cookies, French fries, chicken fingers. And then I look at my lunch that I made for myself in my right hand. Cottage cheese with a Clif Bar. You see, one of the cool things about having spastic cerebral palsy is this. Muscles shake in my body 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And while this can be awkward and sometimes painful, I burn calories. So over time, I've stayed skinny and maintained a healthy weight and stayed on my feet. So again, I look at the food in the cafeteria lunch line. Macaroni and cheese, chocolate chip cookies, French fries, and chicken fingers. I look at my lunch. Cottage cheese with a Clif Bar. I throw away my lunch, and this skinny fat dude goes for comfort. Can you please say the words skinny fat dude between every line? Because that's what I am. Are you ready? Skinny fat dude. Let's say skinny fat dude and then clap after you say skinny fat dude. Are you ready? Let's just try it, okay? On the count of three, say skinny fat dude. So skinny fat dude and clap. Are you ready? 3, 2, 1.
Skinny fat dude.
That was beautiful. Here I go. My stomach is a bottomless pit.
Skinny fat dude.
Sure, I'll eat that. I don't care about it. I can eat more than a horse.
Skinny fat dude.
And throw peanut butter on pizza without remorse.
Skinny fat dude.
In spite of all this food.
Skinny fat dude.
And some beer.
Skinny fat dude.
I turn sideways, people.
Skinny fat dude.
And I disappear.
Skinny fat dude.
But then when I lift my shirt, I'm attacked.
Skinny fat dude.
By the empty sight of my one pack.
Skinny fat dude.
My muscles are like wet newspaper.
Skinny fat dude.
So when I flex,
Skinny fat dude.
All the girls say,
Skinny fat dude.
See you later.
Skinny fat dude.
That's me. So this skinny fat dude has lunch in that cafeteria faculty lunchroom with my friend John. John's been a janitor at the high school for 8 years. He tells me in our conversation that he's going in for open heart surgery tomorrow. That's a note, once again, that nothing in life is guaranteed. It could all end tomorrow. But if I had to bet on anything, I'd bet on myself. Lunch is over. I turn right into the hallway. And again, I pick my feet up. How high? just high enough so it'll fall flat on my face. I'm exhausted. I'm walking in the middle of a hallway, and I'm being passed by people on my left and on my right. A colleague walks by, slaps me on the butt, and says, "Hey, Magellan, get out of the middle of the road." Why did he call me Magellan? Let's do your history. What's that I ridicule of? Magellan. Ferdinand Magellan. I'm going to go over here. I'm seeing you, bro. I'm seeing you. Why? Why did he call me Magellan? Go in here. I'm sorry, ladies. Come through here. To this young man, please say your name.
James.
James, why did my colleague call me Magellan?
Because Magellan traveled all the way around the world.
Traveled all the way around the world. Did he have like a good GPS?
No, he used the ship.
He used the ship and he just kind of floated around, right? He kind of took a circuitous route around the world. It's like, so I'm trying to get to you instead of just giving you the mic, I walk around. That's kind of Magellan route, doing much more than you have to do. So yes, he said, Magellan, get out of the middle of the road. And you know what else he said? He said, Fox, go the speed limit. I think speed limit. It's my freshman year at the University of South Carolina. It's a Wednesday. I get up. I walk past Bates dormitory, past Sarge Fry Field, into the Black P Center where I lift weights. That really didn't work out because I'm a skinny fat dude now. Anyway, I lift weights. I go have breakfast. After breakfast, I walk to 4 straight 1-hour classes. Get a quick lunch. I'm exhausted. I go to Sarge Fry Field for baseball practice where I'm a team manager. And I set up for batting practice. Coach Tanner, my head coach, sees me, and he knew how to push my buttons. He said, "Hey, Stumpy, I bet you can't throw the speed limit." So in a huff, I get a baseball at another coach, and I throw to him off the mound. For the record, I did throw the speed limit. If, of course, the speed limit is 55 miles an hour. Next thing I know, I'm sitting in my room. It's 3 minutes before sixth period is going to begin. I look at my iPad power, 12%, computer power, 15%, phone power, 6%. I am an absolute mess. But I can recall what Robert Andino told me in the batting cage at TD Bank Ballpark just last year. He said, "Fox, we all have screws loose. We've all felt lower than low. We just can't keep the mind shift off the word go. Our elevators might not go to the top floor because when we're finished, all we want is more. We've all been neck deep in alligators. When they're right in front of us, there sits the elevator. We all have screws loose, people. Not a few, not many, but all. If we didn't, we wouldn't be normal." The bell rings. It's the beginning of the final period of the day. 8th period. And when I tell you my mind is all over the place, my mind is all over the place. 8. 4 more than my older brother's number in high school. 5 more than my younger brother's number in high school. 4 less than my sister's number in college. And 1 less than Bordeaux's number in college. Bordeaux, Ryan Bordenick, was our catcher at the University of South Carolina my freshman year. That year as team manager, I was like the bat boy. And I would pray that we were in the field, that we'd give up a ground ball at third base with nobody on base. Because if that happened, Wardo would go to back up first base, and he'd lose his skull cap and mask, and I would run to pick it up. I love to run. I look back at the clock. Time is going by so slowly. I know my students are looking at it and thinking the exact same thing. But here's the bottom line. My freshman year at the University of South Carolina was 20 years ago. Proof that when Karen Tanner told me, life is short, but the days are long. It takes and it teaches. We see it take away from the bleachers. It passes and amasses, as seen by the lines on my face. On clocks and on watches, the same amount each day allotted. We are late, we are early, and we are hurried by the hands never replaced. As a young buck, I saw my future clear. Visions of grandeur, oh dear, from penthouse to outhouse, all mine. I was just lied to by time. The bell rings. The school day is over. I look up, look down. I'm sweating. I can see it in my right armpit. I know just below my right armpit is an X, a scar in the shape of an X, where upon my birth in October of 1978, my lungs collapsed and I had to get a chest tube put in me. That X to me equals survival. I think of Willie. Willie was my roommate in rehab after a surgery. At 15 years old, 1 year older than you all, he stopped breathing for no reason. So he lied there with a chest tube inserted in him just below his right armpit. Willie to me was my brother. Willie Antonius had great makeup. He was always at his best, but he always felt his worst. A short time later, after my stint there in rehab, Willie died. After the bell rang, I look up in the sky, and I realize, thinking of Willie, we can buy a lot of things in this life, but we can't buy time. Even though the school day is over, my work is far from done. I stare straight ahead at my room, which is empty, and what do I see? What do I see? I heard wires and crumbs, that's a yes. Say that? How about an applause? We're listening. I also see scattered desks and paper and pens and pencils. And as I pick up my room, I close my eyes and I picture it spotless. There is nothing that frees my mind more without a doubt than going through my classroom and throwing things out. Mondays through Fridays, I am freed from material prison. As I throw pens, pencils, and papers in their respective bins, I walk along the hallways and, yeah, some profanity I mutter. I see my room and all of its endless clutter. But then I look to my left and I smile because I see an accounting class with paper neatly piled. I gave my Christmas list to Mom and she said, Fox, you need that football like you need a hole in the head. Looking back at my life and doing it again, I'd wake up and suit up and be a garbage man. A pack rat or a hoarder, I am not, because to me, zero adds up to a lot. I go out my door, and I'm almost out of the building when I'm stopped by a student. He says, hey, Prof, I read your book in the library. I really liked it. I think I'm going to buy a copy. Just when I've lost all hope, I look into the eyes of someone who is the reason that I'm a teacher. And I can picture myself as a sophomore in high school. I'm in study skills class. I'm exhausted. My head is down. I'm bored beyond tears. I hear a knock at the door. It's Mr. Ranger, my language arts teacher, giving me a thumbs up, just making sure that I'm okay. In the parking lot, what happens? How does this story go on? What happens as I'm walking to my car in the parking lot? Tell me. I trip and fall. And a colleague is sitting in her car, rolls down her window and says, young man, are you okay? I think to myself, lady, I have never been all right. I get in my car. I sit down. I can't see my scars. And the first thing that happens is that my knees draw closer and closer together. Again, cerebral palsy is relentless. It follows me everywhere. When it pushes, I pull. When I pull, it pushes. The truth is, people, I have never put the amount of effort into my therapy as I should have. And a short time ago, I spoke to Kathy, one of my therapists, for the first time in 25 years. And I told her this. And she said, Fox, you hated me. I didn't hate her. I hated the situation. Therapy. Standing up. I look at myself. I look at the arches in my feet. People, the bottom line is, you can fit a matchbox car. Do we know what a matchbox car is? Okay, I'm not that old, am I? Okay, social events, are we that old? What does that mean?
They don't know what that is.
Well, you know what that is. So say your name and tell us what it is.
My name's Katie, and the matchbox car is a small, it's like a car, it's about an inch tall.
See that?
Applause for Katie. So yeah, you can put a matchbox car under my foot while I'm standing up. I look at my curled toes and I think of people, probably all of you, who could just slip their shoes on or slippers on while they're standing up and walk out the door. Who did that today? Raise your hands high. I hate you, I hate you, I hate you. I hate all y'all! Just kidding. But yeah, I can't do that. And I'd be lying to you if I told you it didn't bother me. It's one reason why I hate airports even more, because in security lines, I have to sit down to put my shoes on and take them off. I look at my lower legs, they're going in one direction, and my knees are going in another direction. This skinny fat dude walks over to a mirror. He's skinny, and his butt sticks out about 3 or 4 inches because my pelvis does not move. I swear I could be 3 inches taller. I breathe my insecurities out and in. But here's the bottom line, people. You can let this pressure bust your pipes, or you could use it to build a diamond. And I choose the latter. I'm that annoying cough you just can't kick. Make you angry, and I'll make you sick. I'll test your will and your character. I'm that test that really matters. I turn a 5-minute walk into the sun into a second-to-second fog-ridden manhunt. Hello, my name's Adversity, and I introduce a man to himself. I make a left-hand turn onto I-287 southbound. I stare straight ahead. I think about all the small freedoms I have been able to enjoy throughout my life. And then simultaneously, I think about those times when I haven't been able to enjoy all of those freedoms. I look at my elbows and I see scars. And each one, as you know, carries with it a memory. I'm 12 years old, lying in a bed at home. It's post-surgery, and I am in a cast in both legs from the waist down. I'm tired. Not so much tired from the pain and the stiffness or physical exhaustion. I am tired of having people having to do things for me. That's been a very hard thing for me to accept throughout my life. Having people to do things for me, even in my best moments. But in this moment at 12 years old, in a cast from the waist down, when I have an itch on my toe, I can't scratch it. When I'm hungry, I can't go get my food. When I have a runny nose, I can't get tissues by myself. I have to get somebody to help me. But I told myself in that moment that I will never again allow anybody to carry me to the bathroom. I'm going to cast from my waist down. I devise a plan. Turn myself so I am crossing the bed so I am not lying with it. Turn myself over onto my stomach and then onto my right side. crawl myself onto the floor, clank, and then army crawl, getting rug burned on my elbows, cross a rug, onto a foyer, and then left-hand turn into the bathroom. I prop myself up onto the commode. What's the commode? What's a commode? Toilet, yes. I prop myself up onto the commode, or up using the commode, hold onto a wall for dear life, and then freedom. And then I think about how freedoms, how your freedoms as students, and my freedom as a teacher, has been threatened by people throughout our lives. That's the freedom to be ourselves. And it's threatened by people who, because of their own insecurities, make the conscious choice to ridicule others to make themselves feel better. What do we call those people? Who's got it? What do we call these people? Say your name.
Jill.
Jill, what do we call you? What are they?
Bullies.
They're bullies. Raise your hand if you have been bullied before. Thank you. You'll say, hey, Fox, you're old, you don't understand. Understand this. Do you recall in the very beginning of this when I told you in the seventh grade that a classmate told me I didn't count? Do you recall that? He's dead. He hanged himself because his girlfriend told him he didn't count. I want to let you know that you all count. That's why I'm here. Take whatever you want, table, chair, or booth. I am going to give you what you want and I need. That's the truth. It's not hard to bully somebody. Just pick something different about them and dwell on it and ridicule it. Well, we're all different. You can do it about things that don't make sense. I was told once that a song I was listening to was bad because I was listening to it. Does that make sense? Yes or no? You can do it about the obvious. A short while ago, someone who has known me their whole life, but is very insecure, saw me without glasses on and said, "Dude, your eyes are messed up." I said, "No kidding, are you blind?" That's kind of funny. To the bullies, you have no right to make somebody feel bad because you're insecure. To the bullied, you are under no obligation to be your bully's friend. To both parties, you both have a right to your feelings. Talk to somebody. Get help. Why? Because I do. Even if tough times last, tough people, they last longer. And as you go down that mogul-ridden path, let your faith grow stronger. If you fall off a horse, get up, get back on the saddle. Victory Highway is not smooth sailing, for that road is a constant uphill battle. Even if positive thoughts don't work, negative thoughts, they'll kill you. Keep your mind, your body, your soul on high alert. You will never know the heights you'll take yourself to. So keep one hand on the wheel and one foot on the gas. These struggles you'll face, they are real. You can tell them to kiss your... Thank you.
Awesome. Good job.
think I'm going to play a little video, and then it's going to be a short video, and we're good. Is it good?
Yeah, yeah, that was really good. I can't believe you have no, like, notes in front of you.
Skinny fat dude. I got it.
You were the one that prevailed. Create your own rhythm. Doesn't it feel great to create your own microcosm? Whether your pace is slow or fast. Let the air in your lungs amass.
I give it my all and do it to no end. I get up the next day and I do it again. I tell myself before I get started, there is no reason to do this half-hearted. My words, my deeds, my actions, my own. My body and my mind, my home. My effort manifests itself in a soaking lather. In the end.
Do you have any questions? Once again, Wi-Fi might seem to connect and tie, but it so too began the great divide. It doesn't always work. What are your questions? I'll phrase it like that. Questions about me, what I said, what I do. I mean, do you want to go back up to homeroom right now, or do you want to chill? Oh, we got a question. I'm going to walk over. All it takes is one. You just start coming. Who had their hand raised? It was over here. I'm going to give you the mic. Just say your name and ask me the question.
My name is Brooke, and what grade do you teach?
So her name is Brooke, and she said, what grade do you teach? I teach mainly freshmen and sophomores in high school, so they're around your age. Okay, I'm a Spanish teacher at Whippany Park, and I've been doing it for the past 12 years. Is that a good answer? Thank you, Brooke. Who else? Who else? Okay, we're gonna go in the middle here. We're gonna get just, you guys are good, man. You guys are good.
Liam, and how do you memorize all that stuff?
How do I memorize all that stuff? That's what Coach Lopez asked me to. I have no life. No. I like being alone. And my mother tells me, Fox, you have a committee in your head. I'm caught a lot talking to myself. So this was kind of natural for me. It's not easy to do. I practice them. So what I'll do is it Leo? Okay. Like Leonardo? Or is it Leo? L-E-O? Oh, Liam. L-I-A-M. So we're going Irish and not Italian, right? Is that right? Okay. So where was I? So I'll write them. Actually, I don't write them. I think about it, what I'm going to write, okay? The topic, where are we going? Memorize it, and then I write it. And then I'll go to coffee shops, libraries, open mics to practice. So it's a craft. It's a craft that you have to work on, like anything. You know, practice doing word problems or football, you know, running a sweep to the left. Same concept, repetition and trying to tweak things. Good question. Good question. What are your other questions? We've got Brooke, we've got Liam. Who else? Who else? Who else? All the way over here. I'm going to go around. My Fitbit's getting some miles under it today. I like it. Anybody have a Fitbit? Anybody? I want it in a wrap. I don't make the big bucks. Who was it? Somebody over here had their hand raised. Garbage can. I'm sorry, please. 14th time I've walked in here, but it's getting tightrope it.
James, what was your best pitching record in a game?
Best game that I ever pitched. But one of the neatest ones that I ever, I don't know if it was the best, but one of the coolest games I ever pitched was in high school, played a doubleheader. And back in those days, when I pitched, if Coach Chambers gave me the ball and said, "You're pitching," that meant he couldn't take me out. I did not like being taken out of games. I wanted to finish what I started. I'll get to your question in a second. I love it. Thank you. I wanted to finish what I started. So this day, a doubleheader, I pitched both games of doubleheader in one book. So I pitched what ended up being 10 innings in one both games. So that was the best. I don't know if it was the best game, probably the most fulfilling game that I pitched. I joke with people. One of our players in Somerset, who's since retired, a really good friend of mine, Johnny Tucker, you know, he'll get out of me for throwing too much. And I'll say, "Hey, Johnny, my left arm is the only sane part of my body. It's the only part that actually works all of the time. I mean, you can tell that my legs are jacked up, my head's a little jacked up, but my arm seems to work." So there you go, James. Next question. Who was it over here? Yes. Just say your name and answer the question.
Allie, and who's your role model?
It was Allie, and who's your role model? Role models, without question, first and foremost, are my parents. I am who I am because of mom and dad. So what I want you to do is, can you please, on the count of three, say thank you, mom and dad? So this is being recorded, so they get to hear this. So thank you, mom and dad, on the count of three. One, two, three.
Thank you, mom and dad.
And it's nothing that they really ever said to me. They're just, to this day, they are tremendous models of behavior. They never threatened me with anything. "Oh, if you don't do this, I'm going to do this." They never gave me any ultimatums. Okay? They might have suggested things, but they were such good models of behavior that I didn't want to disappoint them. And I've carried that into teaching, understanding that, yeah, I like indirect object pronouns, but my students really don't. So it becomes this. I need to be a good model of behavior, because I think you get the behavior that you show and that you allow. So models, definitely my parents, and then down from there, my high school coach, Doug Chambers, my college coach, Ray Tanner, the assistants there, Coach Tolman Myers, Keith Sterling, they're all people that I've tried to take a little bit of in my life every day. Make sense? Other questions? Other questions? Other questions? I'm going to do this or home. God. Go ahead. Sir, your name and your question.
Jacob, and how are you a coach and a teacher at the same time?
So it was Jacob, and he said, "How are you a coach and a teacher at the same time?" So a lot of phone booths. I go into a phone booth real quick and just change. Yeah, it's an old joke. No, it's not easy, but I want to tell you this. Being in Somerset, the Somerset Patriots as a coach, it's a very particular, unique place. And it's a great place for a number of reasons. So I need to stick around there as long as I can. Obviously, when we're in school, when they're on the road, I can't go to those games. Okay? But when they're at home and I'm in Whippany teaching, I leave at 2:45, 2:50, drive to the park, we start VP game, and I don't leave right after the game. A lot of times as a coach, you do your best thinking and planning, etc., after the game into the wee hours of the morning. So as my grandmother would tell me growing up, sleep fast. You might not sleep a lot, but you sleep fast. So homestands, when school's in session, and games are being played, I'm probably getting on average 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night max. So it's not easy, but I take it every day of the week. I wouldn't trade my life in for anything. So you're tired. So what? It's a mindset. Good question. Other questions? You gotta have one or two more. Yes, all the way in the back. I like it.
For those of us who have, I'm Chloe. And for those of us who have or are being bullied, how do you suggest standing up to our bully?
Great question, Chloe. How do you suggest you handle your bully? How do you approach them? Does anybody know who Nick Vujicic is? Nick Vujicic. He's a man from New Zealand who was born without any arms or legs. And he tells a story in one of his speeches he gave out in California a couple years ago of how he approached a bully in his view on that question, Chloe. And I'm gonna piggyback off of him. It's so easy in hindsight, right? To say, oh, I could have just said this, right? But at the time, your feelings are hurt and you get angry. Look, let me say this again. And this is the only way that bullying can stop. You can't just tell somebody, oh, stop that. The person themselves, the bully themselves, has to realize that it's not hard, like I said, to bully somebody. See, Nick Vujicic compared bullying to attaching a matchbox car, and you know what that is, okay, to a BMW, right, and then toting around a matchbox car in the BMW. It's not hard to do it. It's not hard. Once you realize that you're showing weakness as a bully, Maybe you'll stop. Oh, wow. Look, I can lift his hand. Big deal. So can everybody else. Chloe, I would say doing this. And you're showing, it's hard to do, okay? It is hard to do. Every time I see you, you do exactly this. And it hurts me. Stop. Have I been able to do that in my life? No. As a matter of fact, to this day, I talk to somebody, a professional, once a month, because I have a lot of pent-up anger by things that have happened in my life. But realize, as a bully, a hard thing to do is say, you know what? I'm wrong. I need to stop. The bully, it's hard to go up to your bully and say, hey, you're doing exactly this. It's hurting me. Stop. That's my suggestion. But for bullying to stop, the bully has to realize that what they're doing, you're showing weakness. But you have a right to your feelings. If you feel insecure about something, you have a right to your feelings. Get help. okay? And for these people in this room, get help because I do. I'm saying a lot of empowering things to you, but I have a lot of weak moments. I'm going to be 38 years old next week, okay? And I talk to a psychologist because of things that happened to me growing up. Bottom line, I'm not ashamed of it, but I know that I have a right and you have a right to your feelings. So please get help. And when you do that, you are showing toughness. Do you understand that? Does that make sense? The only way we're going to stop bullying is when everybody realizes bullying shows a weakness. It's the easiest thing to do. It's like complaining. It's like sitting in a rocking chair. It gives you something to do, but it doesn't get you anywhere. It doesn't. Chloe, does that make sense? All right, and that's not, you know, me. If you look up Nick Vujicic, Vujicic, he's way better at expressing what I just told you than I am. Hope it helps. More questions? Sir. Thank you.
I'm Justin, and what's your favorite baseball team?
So, what is my favorite baseball team? Being that you're in New Jersey, and we're in New Jersey, from New Jersey, and around here, I'm assuming professional, right? Professional. So, I grew up a huge Yankee fan. I would. Back in those days, have a little Walkman radio, and I would not, up through May or June, miss an inning of a game. I was obsessed. And growing up, I don't know if you know who Don Mattingly is. He's the Marlins manager. He used to play for the Yankees, and he was my idol. If he would make it out growing up, when I was 4, 5, 6 years old, I would sit there and cry. I would cry. So I can recall a moment. I don't know if you, who does, Bouchel. Who does he play quarterback for? He's a Steve Bouchel's son. I think it's University of Texas. But anyway, the quarterback for Texas, University of Texas, his dad used to play baseball for the Texas Rangers. Okay, and one day, Don Mattingly, my idol, hit a line drive. Okay, and Bouchel jumped up and caught it. And I can recall like squirming on the ground crying because, doggone it, that was a freaking hit. Probably a double. Who was idolized Don Mattingly growing up. Idolized him like probably a lot of people our age did. And nowadays, I'm a South Carolina Gamecock fan. So now with the SEC Network and the app, I get to watch all games, all sports. Baseball, football, basketball, soccer. They also have a beach volleyball team. And that's actually televised. So I watch everything. But not as much anymore with the Yankees, but yeah, growing up a huge Yankee fan. Yes. Thanks, Sheila.
I'm Ryan, and what's your favorite hobby to do?
Favorite hobby? I think you heard it. I love going to a park with a tennis ball or a baseball and throwing it off the wall. And you come back to me. I would spend hours as a kid in the backyard. I have 3 siblings, okay? And we played baseball a lot together, but I love sneaking out there alone, okay, with a bat, glove, and a ball, and going through a game while talking to myself, okay? Going through a game in my head. Up steps Mattingly, and I make sure Mattingly hit a home run into the trees. That's a hobby. Obviously, writing is a hobby. I do that a lot. I try to write songs that aren't songs. I would say at this point in my life, writing things that are meaningful for you all to hear so I can speak, and throwing a baseball to this day. And I like to read as well. I'm a reader of biographies and things like that. I do not like watching television. I don't. I think Saturdays are the only days where I watch television because we have football on and I'll watch the baseball playoffs. But I don't like watching television because I don't like being idle, not doing anything. Other questions? Anything else? So I want to ask 3 people What did you take from this today, and what was your favorite part of today's event? Let's call it an event. So I'm going to just go over here. Your name is in your favorite part of the event.
My favorite part of the event, I want to be clapped and respond to your sentences.
So the skinny fat dude poem, do you like that? So my friend, as you, in the beginning, Brett, who's the manager for the Somerset Patriots, one day, he actually gave me the title. He went in before a game to lift weights, and he's an in-shape guy, 6'4", 200 pounds, pitched in the big leagues, and he's maintained a great shape throughout the years, but he thinks he doesn't have huge muscles. So he goes and lifts weights, and he comes back into the coach's room and say, Brett, how do you feel? He goes, I feel like a skinny, fat dude. And I said, that's something to write about. So shortly thereafter, I wrote that skinny, fat dude poem, which I put into the event today. I'm going to go to the other end. What did you like most about today, and what did you take from it?
My name is Catherine, and I learned not to give up, and I really like that you got the first place on getting dressed.
Thanks, Catherine. She said, never to give up. Listen, another guy to look up, and I'm plugging people. Eric Thomas, the hip-hop preacher. He has a line. If you're struggling to do something and you get upset, right? A girl came to him crying and said, I'm going to give up. He said, wait a minute. Don't cry to quit. Cry to keep going. If this is going to put you in that much pain, get a reward for it. Does that make sense? Get a reward for it. People here are bagged up. I see one guy in a sling, right? Okay, well, get a reward for it. Get your collarbone fixed and get back on the field. Get a reward for your work. Okay? And thank you. Yes, I am full uniform Fox. I usually don't, for batting practice, even to this day, a lot of the players will be in shorts and t-shirts. I'll be in my game pants and maybe an undershirt so I can just fire it up. Shirt on and go right to the dugout before the game. That's just me. Full uniform Fox. F-U-F. F period, U period, F period. Fuff. Fuff. And let's do one more. What did you take out of today? What was your favorite part? I'm going to go in the... I'm going to go up front.
My name's Allie, and I'm
Mark. The guy that put it together was our PR director, Mark Rushinoff. So can we say thanks, Mark, for the video? Thanks, Mark, on a count of three. Thanks, Mark. One, two, three.
Thanks, Mark.
All right. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it empowered you, okay? And remember, this has been said before, but nobody can be you better than you can, and everybody here has a right to your feelings. I have a couple of gifts today. Two official Atlantic League baseballs that I threw in batting practice, and they were home runs, they were hit for home runs. Who wants them? Who wants them? Okay, they're baseballs, so let's be careful, okay? I'm gonna toss it, all right? Don't tackle each other. Thank you very much. Thank you to Pope John High School. Thank you to the eighth grade and to Coach Lopez for for getting this all started. Can we please give a good big hand for Coach Jill Lopez?